Next case on our calendar is 95-24-27, Carlos Lewis versus J. Wesley Trimble, Administrator. Mr. Jaffe.
My psychological condition with my inability to work. And then the doctor issued such report to the claimant.
No, that is not the case.
You don't think that's the case?
That is absolutely not the case. And I'm going to try to explain that to you. I wanted to add, there's a third argument that's floating around, and that is the argument of the statute of limitations and whether, in fact, it is jurisdictional or procedural and can be waived. Because in this case, after the employer had the injured worker examined by a doctor that the employer chose, with that doctor agreeing with the second motion filed by the claimant for the allowance of a major depression, the employer filed a motion with the Industrial Commission indicating that it was accepting that condition. And we have said to you, one, that when the employer did it, it was waiving the statute of limitations. And the statute of limitations is waivable. It is not a jurisdictional matter. And we have said, secondly, that the employer can't appeal from its own allowance. Those are the arguments. Now let me go back, if I may, Justice Cook, to what is this case in terms of facts. In 1980, and I might say to you that in the deposition testimony, which the employer took, the deposition of Carlos Lewis, the best I think they could get him to admit was that in 1988, he was upset. And in 1988, he was, and his word is something approaching anxiety, but he could not use the word. I mean, this is a man who had not gone through the third grade, who is borderline retarded, who is functionally illiterate, who tests out on reading, writing, and arithmetic at 1%. 1% up, meaning that 99% of the population of this country will do better than he in terms of reading, writing, and understanding.
Counsel, those facts are before us already, so we understand those, but what troubles me more than what he knew is that he went to a doctor. His doctor said XYZ is related to the work situation, and the doctor sent this report to his attorney.
No, ma'am, if I may interrupt again, that is not correct. He went in 1988 to a doctor in connection with the Social Security exam. The one thing the doctor did not do was relate it to anything, because on Social Security exams, causality is not important. It doesn't matter. The question on Social Security is, do you have it or don't you have it? And when he went to the Social Security exam...
Do you dispute that this report was sent to his attorney?
Oh, no. Absolutely not.
And do you dispute that this report was never given to the Dayton Power & Light prior to their exam?
I would not dispute, and I don't know that it matters, very frankly. Because my argument...
You don't think that some evidence of your client having a prior condition, whatever you want to call it, is important? That the new employer has a right to know what the doctors he's seen and what doctors he's related what
I mean, let me say it this way. I'm not here to argue what they have a right or don't have a right to. I'm here to argue on the facts of this case. And in terms of this particular case, in 1988, when Dr. Arnold examined this man, one, he did not tell this man anything about what the diagnosis was. Two, all of the evidence in the record says this man never saw the report. And very frankly, I think if he had seen the report, there still would have been a question. Could he have understood what the heck it was?
Is his lawyer his agent, though? Do we have to deal with that really basic premise that he was sitting to his agent? Somebody was acting in a fiduciary capacity?
No, I don't think you should hang an injured worker on something that was given to his agent. And if you think of it, in the Edwards case, with those four medical examinations with doctors saying something, in a case that is obviously a contested case because of the number of medical exams, the lawyer involved would have seen those reports. Nevertheless, it was not imputed, if you will, to the individual. We're dealing with a law that is supposed to be there to provide for the worker who is injured. And one of the things I think we need to understand, and maybe I have not been clear on this, is when we're talking psychiatric, we are talking here different conditions. In 1988, when this doctor examined the man, his diagnosis was adjustment disorder. Adjustment disorder is a mild kind of thing, does not last long, that kind of thing. That is a different condition from the condition that was diagnosed in 1990 of dysthymia. And the motion for dysthymia was filed within 2 years. And in 1991, there was a more significant diagnosis of major depression. And that motion was filed within 2 years. So that those two conditions are timely.
Would you agree then that, under your theory that this case might go back to the jury, would you agree then that the jury would be entitled to the social security report and the diagnosis given by the doctor?
Oh, I've got no problem with that.
And then you have your battle of experts.
I've got no problem with that. I don't think this is an evidentiary question. What we have here is a legal question, and that is, what are we going to do by way of the standards? And you have got one court that says the standard is symptom. You got a symptom, you're on notice, if you will. And I would say in this respect, there are two things to be aware of. One, the Industrial Commission doesn't allow symptoms. The Industrial Commission allows conditions. And conditions differ. And there's a difference between a condition of adjustment disorder diagnosed in 88, a condition of dysthymia diagnosed in 1990, and a condition of major depression diagnosed in 1991. That must be borne in mind. I'm over my time. I'm into my rebuttal time. With the commission, I'll stop at this point and come back to rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Jaffe. Mr. Barney. Assume that. I guess the question I have is that Mr. Jaffe argues that there were three different conditions here, and the first one was one that I suppose is adjustment disorder, which I suppose is the least severe condition, and that the condition that was for which compensation was awarded was major depression. Why doesn't that stand on its own? Why do we relate back to 1988 to determine whether the claimant knew he had or should have known he had major depression when that wasn't the issue then, was it?
Well, Judge, I think I have to look at two things here. You've got Ohio Revised Code Section 4123-84, which talks in terms of notice. It does say notice must be given to an employer within 2 years, and basically based upon how many they knew or should have known of the condition. That notice wasn't given. And obviously what we're talking about is the statute of limitations here, which provides an equal playing field for both the employer and the claimant. We've got a psychological condition that was diagnosed in 1988. It was never conveyed, that information was never conveyed to the employer until 1995. You can talk about different conditions, but I think the psychological.
Isn't that the exact scenario in both the Smith and the McCurdy case from Montgomery County? It was a later diagnosis of this, I don't know how to say it.
Systemic
disorder, but that was filed within 2 years of that. But prior to that, in both those cases, the claimant had knowledge of a depressed condition well in advance of the filing of the 2 years.
He had knowledge, and actually what the court said in that case is it was the manifestation of the symptoms which triggered the knew or should have known test. In our particular case, though, I think what this highlights is the fact that the Industrial Commission is concerned about body parts. We talk about body parts in the statute. When we go to hearings, notification is viewed at in terms of body parts. If you look at the actual application that a claimant must file when he files for workers' compensation benefits, it says injured body parts. He lists those. That is considered to be notification for future purposes.
Now, but in our case in Clemente, as Mr. Jaffe points out, the syllabus law does say it uses the term additional condition in the syllabus, not symptom.
I understand that.
What do you say about that?
Well, I think, once again, you know, we're talking in terms of body parts. I think you have to go back and look at the injury, the way injuries have been treated over the year. For instance, if you have an injury that a claimant sustains at work in 1988, let's say, he's got problems with his elbow, and let's say he's also got problems with his knee, but he doesn't list the knee on the application. At that time, let's say the knee later develops into a torn anterior cruciate ligament, but he didn't list it at the time of the application. He only applies for that 3 years later. It's forever barred. And we're talking about body parts, and that's what the Industrial Commission focuses on.
What do we do with psychological? Is that just the brain now we're talking about? Is it body part?
The psychological condition, Your Honor, if you look at them, even if you look at the diagnoses that the various doctors provide, often it is a progression. Even though Dr. Marshall,
That was somebody back in the audience.
Okay. Even though Dr. Arnold stated that he didn't feel it was a progression, I think all you have to look is the symptoms that were diagnosed at that time. And I can't rattle all of them off, but certainly he diagnosed depression, he diagnosed anxiety, I believe nervousness, and also he stated at the time that the claimant was suffering from a fear about being around other people.
But couldn't that, I guess, not to quote, but it seems to me that could be a... That's a symptom of what could be a very temporary condition. The person has been injured at work, he's been off work, he is worrying about his bills and so forth. And I would guess many people who are injured in the workplace have that temporary condition, but they get out of it. It doesn't turn into dysthymia or a major psychological problem. So that I guess it still seems to me that the condition here is not the adjustment disorder, but it's the dysthymia, which is really what the commission had before, didn't it? For benefits.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, though, Your Honor, they didn't even give him dysthymia. They gave him major depression.
They gave
him panic disorder with agoraphobia. I think that just highlights the problem here. We have four different doctors, and I believe three different diagnoses. Dr. Arnold diagnosed adjustment disorder. Depressed mood in 88. In 1990, a diagnosis dysthymia. In 1992, Dr. Clary diagnoses major depression as well as panic disorder. I believe Dr. Jill Schaefer at that point diagnosed a major depression, panic disorder with agoraphobia.
Well,
four doctors, four diagnoses.
Isn't the reason that the depression was the one that was accepted was because the employer said he accepts depression and that the claimant's condition is permanent. For me, this is a very crucial part of this case, and I would like you to spend some time addressing the issue of waiver of the statute of limitations. Here we have an employer accepting this condition, and I would like to hear from you concerning the statute of limitations.
I understand that. That was actually going to be the thrust of my argument until I heard the thrust of
I was surprised. I was surprised.
And until you had to respond to my questions.
I actually started to come up here to talk about Garrett and Nature and that sort of thing.
So I thought that's what I thought the case was about.
I did too. What I'd like to say is that this is very different from Garrett and Baker. Number one, Garrett and Baker didn't even discuss the statute of limitations. That was not even an issue in either of those cases. Statute of limitations was not raised. We didn't raise it. We raised it timely. And obviously that's a factor here. In Garrett also, I'd like to point out that and Baker, for that matter, we were dealing with a situation where a self-insured employer paid for medical treatment, paid compensation, and also certify on a form C-174 to the Industrial Commission that they were recognizing these conditions. And I believe also Baker, Baker sent a letter to the claimant saying we do recognize this condition. But once again, the most important issue here is the statute of limitations. It was never raised in either of those cases. We are raising that here. I think the other issue you have to look at here is we didn't certify it in the normal fashion in this case. We certified it in the form of a motion, if you want to call it a certification, or accepted it in the form of a motion. A motion, by definition, is an application for a determination from the Industrial Commission. And it was a two-part motion, if you recall. The motion said, we will accept the conditions diagnosed by Dr. Clarin. It also said we would ask that the commission find that this condition is permanent. Now, obviously, that's a two-part motion. I think it's important, sort of a fact-specific case that we have here, admittedly, but it is a motion, and we're asking for two separate things. I think equally important is the fact that we said we accept Dr. Clary's conditions, but also we said we wanted him to find that he's permanent. They didn't do either of those things.
Do you want the commission then to have the option to say, no, it's not, although you disagree, it's part of it, we find it isn't, so we're going to disagree with your stipulation that it was part of the injury?
Well, actually, I think that...
What you're saying is you're, even though we admitted to something, we still leave it up to the commission to, if they find it isn't, then they can just say we were wrong, we shouldn't have accepted it.
Well, I hate to say it this way, but I think it was sort of an unsophisticated way of doing things. I mean, you know, obviously people are going to read it different ways. I think the important issue that we have here, though, is we've got 412384, which says that the application shall be filed within 2 years, or it is forever barred. It's mandatory.
He's a self-insurer, isn't he?
Yes, DPL is self-insured.
Is that a choice that a person has, a company has to make, whether they join into the club or self-insured? They make that choice, right?
Yes.
And when you make the choice of becoming a self-insured, don't you take all the responsibilities then that you that the commission usually would take care of?
Yes. Not all of them. We still have the same laws. Some things we can't
So he chose to be self-insured. He chose to accept the condition, and now he's coming back and saying, wait a minute, they knew about the conditions that the statute of limitations should apply. Is that what you're saying?
The claim's not recognized for that, those conditions at this point in time. Understand that. It went to a hearing, and those conditions were not approved. Some of them were. Major depression was, but it was also approved for panic disorder with agoraphobia, and that was not diagnosed by Dr. Clara.
How does the defective waiver argument, the fact that you did not get the prior doctor's report, you did not get any prior information about the Social Security claim and the fact that the attorney had it in his position, does that have any effect on your waiver argument?
I think the waiver argument is unique to this particular case, and I think you have to go to 412384. There are only three ways that you can waive 412384. If I recall correctly, the only way that the statute can be told is if the claimant provides written notification to the employer, if the employer provides medical treatment paid for by the employer with the employer's doctor, and three, compensation and benefits paid. Those are the only three waivers that you can have. Otherwise, the statute says it shall be forever barred. In other words, if you don't file within that 2 years that you knew or should have known, it is forever barred. That is statutory.
What if Mr. Jaggi said, well, Kenneth, you know, you waited, you could do it ahead and meet the stipulation and agree, think you have some sort of argument that we can't waive what we didn't know, we can't waive what we didn't have possession of, and you didn't give it to us, so therefore you bear the burden of responsibility now?
Absolutely, that is our feeling, of course. I'm not sure I've got a legitimate legal argument to make that, because as I said, there are only three types of waivers. But what I can say is, obviously, we didn't make a knowing waiver in this case. This is a jurisdictional issue. It has been, the courts have stated in the past that this is a jurisdictional question. The Industrial Commission did not even have jurisdiction to act upon this because the application, the motion filed by the claimant was already time barred. It was time barred when it was presented to the self-insured employer.
But that would have not been so unless for Clemente, because the majority of this court changed the law, did it not, in Clemente? Because point 8.4 was very clear, and I just reread, not only my dissent, but Judge Fair's dissent in that case. And that last paragraph of 8.4, and in addition to that, the Dent case, decided shortly before, we just changed it.
You expanded upon it, as I read Clemente, for what we call flow-through conditions. And actually, I don't have any problem with that, right? And I don't think that causes any problems here. If anything, it just clarifies. We're still, in that case, once again, talking about body parts, conditions, that sort of thing, symptoms. And I'm not asking you for symptoms today. We have an actual diagnosis from 1988. I'm not sure what your question is, Your Honor, but...
Obviously, even when I read Chief Justice O'Neill's opinion in Kittle, I think it was, he doesn't even relate it to body parts. It says that if it came from the injury, then the 2-year statute of limitations is not operative. And then Kittle, I think, was followed maybe by Dent, and then Clemente said something entirely different. My question is, doesn't Clemente, before we can do, to reverse this case, don't we have to do something with Clemente? Isn't your position that Clemente fully supports your position? Because that was even a summary judgment case, as I remember.
I don't think that Clemente harms my position anyway. I read Clemente.
No, I'm saying it helps your position.
Yes, I think it helps our position.
This doesn't deal with specification.
Well, no, it does not at this point.
You've used your time, Mr. Barney. Thank you. Mr. Jaffe, you save 5 minutes of your time for rebuttal.
In your amicus brief, Mr. Jaffe, in Propositional Law 3, you go through what you think the law ought to be. Then you say Clemente versus Wien explained. How can you explain that?
I have considerable trouble explaining it. We try to make an effort at it there. I just want to suggest a bright line to you on this that may or may not be appropriate. And I will in a moment, but I'd like to clear up one thing, Justice Stratton, and that was on the waiver problem and the comments that they had no knowledge. If you look to the supplement, the first supplement that was filed, S12, is a report from Dr. Clary. Dr. Clary clearly notes on page 1 of that report that this man went to see Dr. Arnold in 1988 and I think puts the employer on notice at that point. So I don't think this is a question of they didn't know it. I really think they were in a position where when their doctor told them this man had a major depression, now let me say to you that the diagnoses from their doctor are not as we're related to you here. The diagnoses, and again, you can see if you start with S12, the last page is the diagnoses, and the diagnoses are major depression, panic disorder. The same diagnosis that was given with the exception of agoraphobia. Now, let me go to the bright line, and let me talk a little bit about the symptom problem, and let me illustrate it in this fashion. I have a cough. As a result of that cough, should I know that I have a cancer? Because really that's what we're saying, or what the Montgomery County Court of Appeals is saying in these instances. If you've got a symptom, you know. And Montgomery County Court fails to recognize that there are different psychological conditions, all of them spelled out in something called the DSM-4, all of them being different diagnoses. And yes, there may be some difference between the doctors on diagnoses, but that gets hammered out in the administrative process and in the trial process. Now, I have a cough. I don't know I have a cancer. I don't know that the cancer comes from my work. And that's really the problem here. And that's where the court, the Montgomery County Court, has gone astray. And what I want to suggest to you is that in the case of White versus Mayfield involving an occupational disease, you spelled out the test on the statute of limitations. And that test was that you use the date of first treatment, the date of first diagnosis, or the date that the individual first became disabled, whichever is the later of the three. And it would seem to me that if you were willing to do that, and clearly did it in White versus Mayfield, some consideration ought to be given to using that test for this problem, because I don't think the courts need to be tied up needlessly with summary judgment motion, should this go to the jury, that kind of thing.
Well, White versus Mayfield was an occupational disease.
That is correct.
What you're arguing, this case, is an injury and a flow-through from the injury.
That is exactly
so
correct.
So I guess your argument is you're equating White, an occupational disease, with a nonspecific, if you will, psychological disease.
Right. What I'm saying is, on the problem with statute of limitations, in terms of that problem, if you want a bright line that can't be understood, and apparently the White versus Mayfield bright line that you set up, has been followed, and I don't think it has created problems or you'd be seeing cases on it. It seems to me this is something that ought to be considered. Let me say to you then that the points I have made today have been, one, that the present test is not a workable test. Your different courts of appeals have applied it in different fashion, despite what you did in the Edwards case after Clementi. That we ought not to expect the injured worker to be able to self-diagnose, which is what the Montgomery Court of Appeals would say, and that there are different conditions, so that if you want to say the adjustment disorder he didn't file within 2 years of that, we're not talking about the adjustment disorder, that's not the condition we're asking for, and he did file within 2 years of the decedent, and he filed again within 2 years of the major depression.
Had you represented this claimant at, in 1988 at the time he was seen by Dr. Arnold, I think, and you received that report, Mr. Jaffe, would you have felt
it? I'm going to be very frank with you. In 1988, I would have done exactly what the lawyers in this case did. The practice in 1988 before the Clementi decision was if a psychological condition was referred to by psychologist, psychiatrist, other doctor, for the most part, unless it was something that was disabling that individual at that point in time, you let it alone. We in the practitioner area understood that in fact you could come in as a result of the killed case, that you could come in at any time down the road when the necessity was there to do it and file for that condition. It was not until Clementi was decided that, and this court sets up this requirement, that people then started to change the practice.
Kittle didn't even say body parts, did it? It just said coming from the injury, I think Chief Justice O'Neill said.
I believe that's correct. It's been a while since I've looked at Kittle. Kittle is a case that is difficult to understand. I was impressed, frankly, in Clementi, with Judge Baer's dissent, in which he made it clear that he thought the codification in 4123.84 was a codification and not a reversal of Kittle. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Jaffe. The case is submitted. You'll be advised for opinion.